welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, it's Macabre from 1962, but first a broadcast of The Hermit's Cave, a syndicated one from the 1940s called Mystery of the Thing.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air.
Dr. John Forrestier.
Henry, you two in Forrestier's
case. Sure, I saw the coat. It was Dawn Forrestier's, that's for sure. Had her name stitched in it. Beautiful a piece of sable as a poor newspaper reporter ever looked upon. Yeah, and her other clothing was there, too. Underneath the coat.
Aloud, Clara, is believed that the beautiful Dawn Forrestier has been murdered. This morning, several hours after Dr. Forrestier reported his wife missing, Sexton Rolf Griggs of Green Cedar Cemetery found a bundle of clothing inside the cemetery gate, which has been identified as belonging to Mrs. Forrestier.
Oh, golly, in the burial ground. Readers of the Gazette will recall the dramatic circumstances which have surrounded Dawn Forrestier since early this year. She was discovered one morning in the spring, wandering in the park near Lawnview Hospital by Dr. John Forrestier.
Sure, I remember. Read all about it. She was a victim of
amnesia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that means you can't remember who you are or where you came from or anything. That tells all about it here in the Gazette.
The doctor took her to the hospital.
Yeah. And he named her Dawn.
Uh-huh. And fell in love with her and married her. They never discovered who she was. It says here, it was thought at the time the beautiful woman who later became the bride of Dr. Forrestier might have attended a masked ball or came from the stage. But no such person was ever reported missing.
Sure. Don't you recall it, Clara? She was dressed in an old-fashioned gown, torn all to tatters.
Yeah, and now she's disappeared again, as mysterious-like as she came.
Oh, gee, ain't it awful. You know, Clara, I kind of got it figured out. I'll bet she was the moll of some gangster who spirited her away and murdered her. Gee, murdered. Probably cut into 100.
Gentlemen of the press, I have called you here to my home. Tell you that you need not continue your search for Mrs. Forrestier.
What do you mean, Doctor? Continue the search.
Well, what's the dope, Dr. Forrestier? Have you located her?
I think perhaps we have.
Well, where is she, Doctor?
Where did you find her? Please.
What are you going to do?
Please, gentlemen. If you will kindly allow me to do the talking, or rather, if you will permit Mrs. Forrestier to speak.
Then she is here in the house?
No. My wife will speak to you through a letter she left behind for me. I only discovered it this evening. For you see, she had placed it in a volume of verse from which I often read to her. Oddly enough, I had thought I would never want to open the sonnets from the Portuguese again. It was against my will that I turned to it this evening. Perhaps guided by Dawn. Who knows? Who can say? It was here I found her letter to me.
What is in the letter, Dr. Forrester?
I'm about to read it to you. There will be a few passages I will omit. They are personal messages meant only for my eyes. But here is the story of the disappearance of Dawn.
My darling John, this is going to be the most difficult and tragic hour of my life. For in this letter, I must say farewell to you, my devoted husband. The story I have to tell you, John, will be so strange and terrible that at first you won't believe it. But as you remember me, as you recall the circumstances of our meeting, how you found me dazed and wandering in the park one spring morning, how we've never known who I was or where I came from, then you will give more credence to my story. You named me Dawn because you found me at sunrise. Forrest, dear, because you loved me. We met in the dawn, my darling. But I must creep away from you in the darkness of the night. Oh, John, how I've loved you. And yet how disturbed I've been since I've lived here with you. I've tried to keep it from you, but your analytical mind and keen eyes have often noted my condition. You've repeatedly said...
What is it, Dawn? What's wrong?
Why, nothing, darling. Why?
You know, dear, I often think it must have been during the nighttime that you were mistreated or abused by someone or something which brought about your amnesia.
Why, John?
Because it's always in the nighttime that you appear nervous, disturbed.
Oh, John, you're imagining things. It was not you, John, who was imagining things. It was I. At least at first I thought it was a product of my imagination. It happened for the first time a few days after we returned from our honeymoon and had come here to live. You had left my room. I had turned off the light by my bed, prepared to sleep. First, I thought I must be dreaming. From a distance, I heard a singing wind, like the opening strains of a melody played on an organ. Something quickened within me. I seemed to know the melody. I thought to myself, everything is going to come back to me. I shall know who I was before I became Dawn Forrest here. I listened intently. And then as I was listening, my outer bedroom door seemed to light up. Yes, that's it, to light up. I sat up in bed. Streetlight shining through my window made the thing that materialized against my door very discernible. I could see that it was something phosphorescent. It glowed and shimmered in the half light. Then I could see that it was taking a shape and form, a form of a human being. For many seconds I looked upon it too frightened to speak. Finally I got out the words, "What are you?" There was no answer. When I spoke, it disappeared. In the morning, I was convinced I'd dreamed it all. But the next night, the same thing occurred again. Once more, I was aroused from a half-sleep by the music of the wind. The second time, the glowing figure seemed to be closer. I spoke again. "Who are you?" This time, the figure didn't vanish so quickly after I'd spoken. It lingered a few seconds. And then faded away like a picture on a screen. This materialization occurred for 7 consecutive nights. It was then, John, that I asked a favor of you. Remember? John?
Yes, darling?
Would you think it too bold of me if I asked if we might go away for the weekend?
No, darling. I wish we could. I've noticed how nervous you've been the last few days.
I'm sorry, dear. I don't know what it is.
Don't let it distress you, Dawn. You're not entirely well, you know. Maybe some time before your nerves stop playing tricks on you.
You're so helpful to me, John.
I wish I might grant your request to go away for the weekend, but But my work at present makes it impossible.
Oh, it's all right, dear. It was only a suggestion. I'm really all right, so long as I have you. You had said it would be a long time before my nerves stopped playing me tricks. Oh, this was something to cling to. It was silly of me to get upset. No human figure really materialized in my room. It was my nerves playing me tricks. But the visitation didn't stop, John. Hearing the singing winds, having that glowing, shimmering thing appear in my room was continuous. And then came the thing that struck terror in my heart. This night I had fallen asleep. Again, the music of the wind aroused me. I opened my eyes, and then I gasped in fright. For this time, the glowing figure was standing beside my bed, so near me I could reach out and touch it. Then something terrible happened. I found I couldn't breathe. Something was cutting off my breathing. I struggled for air. And while I struggled, the thing near me began to make a strange sound. Then I sensed what was happening. The thing was somehow taking the breath from me, getting it into its own body. I must do something quickly. I sat up. I threw my arm out as if to push the thing away. I struggled to push it away. And as I touched it, I could feel something cold and gelatin-like. Then it disappeared. That was the night, John, that I screamed.
Darling, what is it? What in the world is it? Dawn, look at me. Tell me, what was it? A nightmare?
John! From then on, events transpired rapidly. You made an appointment for me with Dr. Bland, the eminent psychiatrist. Oh, I know, darling, you were upset because I refused to go to him. But I knew by then that it was no use. The thing was growing bolder all the time. Many nights it stood over me in my room, and without touching me, was yet able to take the breath from me and command it to enter its own body. As it did this, night after night, it became stronger, and I became weaker. You will recall vividly what occurred 2 weeks ago tonight. We were invited to the Westings for dinner, and we accepted. An hour before we were to leave, I sat at my dressing table, putting the last finishing touches to my makeup. It was only dusk outside. Never had the thing appeared but in the nighttime. I was brushing my hair when I heard the melody of the wind. The figure stood right behind me. And John, I could see what it was. In the mirror, I could see what the thing was.
We'll tell you all before the night is done, yes.
And now, the hermit.
And now, Dr. Forrester continues to read to a group of newsmen the letter his wife, Dawn Forrester, left for him before her strange disappearance. Listen to Dawn Forrester's story of the mystery of the thing.
This, John, is going to be the difficult part to make you believe. That as the thing stood behind me at the dressing table, I could tell what it was. We didn't go to the Westings for dinner. Instead, you put me to bed.
I shouldn't have allowed you to accept, darling. You haven't been up to par for days. I'm going to call Ralph in to see you tomorrow. You don't look well, darling.
Don't call anyone in, dear. It'll do no good.
Nonsense, honey. There are very few things that medical science can't cure these days. And believe me, darling, I'm going to have you well again.
Your doctor friend came. He gave me medicine to take. Oh, I knew it was no use at all. And yet I would do anything to humor you. For the thing that I now recognized was getting so strong that it was always near me. As I grew weaker, it grew stronger. And I wondered that you couldn't hear it breathing in my room. Now it had a power over me. A strong, compelling power. It was the master. I, almost a slave. Night before last, it exerted its will for the first time. It compelled me to rise from my bed. It was so strong now, it could actually make sound.
Come with me. Come with me.
As I rose from the bed, its phosphorescent glow seemed to envelop me. We moved toward the door, and it opened without the touch of a hand. We seemed to glide down the stairs, out of doors. The wind that touched my face was like the refrain I'd heard over and over again. We moved along the street, I and the thing. With great speed, we covered the streets and were soon on the outskirts of the city. I could see now the place which was our destination. Then I mastered all the willpower left to me, for I understood clearly all the dark things I'd not known before. Oh, but John, there was you. I couldn't go to this place where the thing was taking me. I couldn't enter there without somehow leaving word for you. I struggled. I fought with my adversary. I was gaining. I broke away. Somehow I got breath and strength enough to return home and to my bed. Now comes the end of my story and my farewell to you.
Here, gentlemen, I will omit a page. It is personal.
But what happened to Dawn? Where is she?
Since this morning, when the sexton at Green Cedar Burial Ground found my wife's clothing, permission has been granted by the state for me to check up on the material found in this letter. I've almost finished reading to you. I'm refraining from reading the last pages until we have made a visit to the cemetery. If you men of the press will get in your cars and follow me, you may be able to complete and verify the information given to me by Don Forestier.
Hello, Dr. Forestier. The men have nearly completed digging.
Thank you, Sexton.
What goes on, Dr. Forestier?
As you can see, these men are engaged in opening up a grave.
Why, Dr. You've come to the casket, Doctor.
Very well, Sexton. If you'll please open the box.
Yes, sir. Can you lift the casket out, boys?
Right.
Now, gentlemen, after the box is opened, I will read the remainder of my wife's letter. Open it, please, Sexton.
Great heaven. Yeah. Dr. Forestier, great Scott, why have you opened this grave?
Sexton, will you reach in and procure the diamond ring that lies in the coffin?
Yes. Here it is, sir.
This is my wife's ring, gentlemen.
How did it get in this coffin?
Here are the last pages of my wife's letter to me.
Now comes the end of my story and my farewell to you. John, I knew from the moment I saw the thing in the mirror of my dressing table. I knew from then on who and what it was. The first night I was strong enough to break away from it as it drew me to the gates of Green Cedar Cemetery. And I've spent my last day writing this letter to you. For tonight, the thing will appear again. And this time, I must follow it. I must follow it to the grave, John. Into the grave. I know how it will be. The thing, the protoplasm that has appeared before me so many nights and has grown in features and strength, will absorb me until I'm no longer a living person. And I must follow it. First, I will hear the music of the wind. Then the thing will appear, and I will be dissolved into it. John, my darling, in case you don't believe my story, open the grave near which you will find my discarded clothing. For I'm wearing the ring you gave me, my love. I'm wearing it as I return to the grave. For you see, John, the thing that I saw in the mirror, that which has gained power over me, is I, John. It is my own ghost come to claim me to return to the grave from which I broke away.
Ain't it awful, Clara? Could anyone believe such a terrible thing could happen on this earth?
It's almost too horrible to talk about.
Yeah. There, when they opened that grave, lay a decayed skeleton.
Oh.
Wearing the same satin gown that Dawn Forestier was wearing when she was found wandering in the park by Dr. Forestier.
And there was Dawn's ring inside the casket.
Yeah.
It says here in the Gazette that the inscription on the tombstone over that grave read, Lila Manton. And Lila Manton was a famous actress 85 years ago. She died one night very suddenly, just as she was to appear on the stage. Her cue to appear on stage was an organ playing. The music was written by the man Lila Manton was going to marry that night after the theater play was over. And the name of the man was David Forestier. He was a relative of Dr. John Forestier. But she died that night. The marriage never took place.
What do you think it means, Clara? Does it mean that Lila Manton returned from the spirit world to live out her life that was ended so suddenly?
Sure, I think so. But her ghost body made her come back to the grave. Well, that's how I got it figured out.
Finally absorbed a new vision and shape and made her return to her grave. Yeah, turn on your light. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
The Hermit's Cave, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from the 1940s. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to a broadcast of Macabre, written and directed by William Verdier for the Armed Forces Radio Service in 1962. Prior to that, at least what is on record, William Verdier performed sound effects for an episode of Sherlock Holmes with Tom Conway and Nigel Bruce, and directed the show Music and the Muse, where poetry was read on NBC in 1949. This next broadcast he directed called The Crystalline Man from January 1st, 1962.
Strange forces of brought into play when man attempts to misuse these forces. He is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre.
The Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, The Crystalline Man. Yes?
This is Thomas Paine of the National Museum. I'm calling for Professor Abernathy. We've been trying to reach you for a week.
I've been out of town. Gone.
It's about the expedition to the glacier.
Oh, what? Have they returned?
Well, yes. Unexpectedly.
Did they find anything?
Not exactly. You see, Professor Norden...
Come. What about Professor Norden?
He did not come back.
What?
The members of the expedition are meeting tonight. At the museum. Can you attend?
Certainly, Mr. Paine. What time?
8:00. And may I ask you, sir, not to fail us?
Of course I won't. But what's happened to Norden?
At the moment, sir, I cannot say. We'll expect you then at 8:00. What we have to report is of the utmost urgency.
Gentlemen, a simple expedition to the Arctic, and you come back whimpering like children. Now, really, what do you expect me to think, Professor Abernathy?
Please be seated, Dr. Vega. Thank God you've come. You know Thomas Paine of the museum?
Yes, he telephoned me.
And my associate, Craig Taylor.
How do you do, Mr. Taylor?
Good evening, Doctor.
Now, what happened to Norden?
It's hard to explain.
Professor, either he came back or he didn't. Which was it?
He did not.
That thing in the other room.
Not yet, Paine.
Thing? What thing?
Before you see it, Doctor, it'll take explanation.
What do you think? I am a child? You believe I'm too naive to know the facts? Let me refresh you. I backed your expedition. My father disappeared in those wilds 5 years ago and was never found. Professor Norden thought he knew the route, that he could find some trace, but you return without him, cowering like a pack of whipped puppies. Now, speak up, gentlemen. What happened?
Have patience with us, Dr. Vega. We have stumbled upon something we do not understand. Something that has cost the life of Professor Norden and may not stop there.
Well, go ahead. Tell me the full story.
We had camped for the night on the glacier. The next morning, we noticed a fissure in the ice. A passageway large enough for a man to crawl through. In the ice, we could see the frozen body of a dog. It wasn't one of ours. I thought it might have been one of your father's. Norden decided to crawl into the fissure to investigate. Taylor remained with me. A storm came up suddenly, and when we called out to Norden in the passageway... Professor Norden, have you found any trace? Professor! What do you make of it, Craig? He's been in there 15 minutes. Do you think he's all right?
I don't know. We haven't heard from him since he left us. With a storm blowing, a fissure isn't exactly a safe place to be.
Danger of an avalanche. Better warn him. Professor Norden! There's a storm. Let's get out of here.
No answer.
Got a flashlight? It's dark in there.
Yes.
Come on, we better look for him.
Fisher doesn't appear too old.
No, perhaps only a few days old. Otherwise, there'd be a heavy layer of snow on the bottom. I hope that ice overhead is solid. Any kind of slide would bury us.
Pitch black now. I didn't realize the passage was this deep.
What's that ahead?
Huh?
It's like a rock. Where the glacier meets the mountainside.
2 more feet and we'll be there.
Why, it looks like the entrance of a cave. Norden must be inside.
Certainly took a chance going this far by himself. Shall we go in?
We have no choice. Look, it's not a natural cave.
You're right. The entrance is a carved arch. Solid quartz. Do you recognize the symbols?
I've never seen anything like this before. Where to find Craig, and by coincidence, too. If that fissure in the ice hadn't opened here, it might have been lost forever.
How old would you guess it is?
Impossible to tell. We've got to find Norton. Hand me the light. I'll go first. Professor Norton! Professor!
Looks like an ancient crypt. Tarnished urns, ornate carving.
Unhealthy atmosphere, Craig. I don't know what we've stumbled on, but from the past I know nothing about. Where could Norton have gone?
Seems to be the only room. He's got to be here.
I'll move the light around once again, slowly.
A man just doesn't disappear in thin air.
What's that?
Where?
A pile of rubble. Something caved in.
Yes, in the corner. Come on. It's Norton. He's alive.
Quick, clear the rocks. He's caught in the slide. Professor Norton, can you hear me?
Yes. I'm done for, Abernathy. You and Crane, get out of here as fast as you can.
Nonsense. We'll have you free in a moment.
There's another room behind those rocks.
Don't go in there. I moved some rocks to cover the doorway. Slide buried me.
Did you find a trace of Dr. Vega's father?
No. Just cover that doorway and leave. Norton!
Poor devil. He's gone.
Strange.
What's that?
I'm not a medical doctor, but he doesn't seem to have been fatally injured by the cave-in.
What do you mean?
The answer may lie in there.
He was probably delirious.
We'd better get out of here. But before we do, shouldn't we have a look?
Norton warned us.
Would a scientist refuse?
After you, Professor.
Careful, Craig. Don't upset that boulder. It could stop all our plans.
Ease under that arch. We don't know how old this is. It may crumble.
Why, it's just a room like the other.
Look, straight ahead. At the foot of that altar.
Yes. Sparkles like a jewel.
That's what Norton warned us about.
Nonsense. We're scientists, Craig.
Norton was no fool.
Neither am I. Let's have a closer look. A 10-foot jewel. A prize from the Arabian Nights.
Or a quartz sarcophagus.
Of course. Why was Norton afraid of it? It's not locked. The lid can be raised.
Don't, Professor.
My boy, this is what every scientist dreams of. How can you refuse?
All right. I can't tell why. Something seems to be warning me to leave this alone. If you have to, take a look and let's get out of here.
Harry, give me a hand.
Okay.
What was it? What did you find in the sarcophagus, Professor Abernathy?
Will you follow us, please, Dr. Vega?
Wait. It might be better to destroy it.
Mr. Taylor, you can't do that.
Yes, I know. The museum.
You might remember we have financed your exploits for many years. There is some sort of obligation to us, don't you think?
Pardon me. I had forgotten the commercial aspects.
The public has a right to see these remnants of mankind's past.
Gentlemen, will you follow me, please? Frankly, we are at a loss to make it out. It is entirely beyond the range of my experience. In the center of the room, if you will.
The quartz sarcophagus. Well, what are we waiting for? Open it.
I hope we don't regret this.
Help me, Craig.
Okay.
There it is, Dr. Vega.
This is incredible. Is it some kind of joke?
We wish it were, Doctor.
Man. A crystalline man, perfect in detail, even to his thumbprints. It's fantastic. What do you think, Mr. Payne?
I haven't had a great deal of time to research it. However, I can't link him to any period of recorded history. He is not prehistoric, as he resembles modern man. His clothing is well tailored, though of a design I've never seen. He looks 45, intelligent and scholarly. He doesn't have the appearance of death. The strange part is, instead of flesh and blood, he seems to be pure crystal.
Is it possible the man could once have lived? And if he could, what forgotten tongue lost in the antiquity of time would he speak?
We may know tomorrow.
How do you mean?
I believe that by some process unknown to us today, this man is still alive. tried everything. He is solid crystal. I was mistaken.
He is perfect to the last blood vessel.
Why should a man who is not flesh and blood need blood vessels?
Shall we admit he is merely a sculptured statue?
We don't seem able to prove otherwise, but I feel some obvious fact is escaping us.
Wait. There is one further chance. He may be a silicon form of life. In that case, he should respond to electric shock, be recharged, so to speak. Let me connect these electrodes.
Any sign of life will show in the form of a brain wave on the electroencephalogram. Good thinking, Professor.
There. Now we'll give him a jolt.
Nothing. Try it again. Not a thing.
Look, an eyelid moved.
No, Payne, you're mistaken. Nothing moved.
Professor, did you see?
No. If he's alive, it's in a form unknown to us.
What will you do with him?
You finance the expedition, Dr. Vega. You call it.
But, gentlemen, the museum...
Mr. Payne, can't you forget that place? Does every scientific discovery have to go on display like a bargain in Gimbel's basement?
Well, I only assume the body would have to be disposed of somewhere.
Are you sure you want it, Mr. Payne? After Norden's warning?
What happened to Professor Norden had nothing to do with the crystalline man. He was probably delirious when you found him.
All right, enough. The truth of this still escapes us. However, it can serve no purpose by remaining here.
We may have it.
You may regret it, Payne, but... Go ahead. Take it. Put it on display in the slumber room. That may well be what he's doing.
Very well. We'll exhibit it in the public interest. With the provision that you retain the right to examine it when you choose.
Well, Professor, I just left the coroner's office. Too bad.
The coroner's office?
The guard we found unconscious here this morning. The one guarding the crystalline man last night.
Yes?
He just died. Man, you kids eat like horses. It's a good thing your father makes a little money. Ticks it all just to feed you.
Craig, now stop it. When you were their age, you had some life in you, too.
There's plenty of life left in this old boy, Mary.
Hey, Dad, when you quit laughing, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead, Jimmy. Try me.
After supper, can I go over to Ralph's a while?
And can I go too, Daddy?
Now, wait a minute. Both of you? What's going on?
Ralph's got a new turtle.
You children run along, but don't be out late.
Oh, boy.
Come on, let's go.
Jimmy, you and Christine be careful and come home before dark.
Sure thing. Bye, Dad.
We will. Bye, Daddy.
Wow. A couple of wild Indians. Reminds me how old I'm getting.
Oh, darling, they're just little children.
I wish I could be carefree like that.
Craig, things are different, aren't they?
Oh? How?
Something's bothering you.
You're imagining it.
No, no. Ever since that last trip, you all seem worried. How long has it been in the museum?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And two more.
Don't go on, Mary. The police said Mrs. Locks died from natural causes. She was found the next morning by her pail and mop in the Egyptian room.
And what about Gus?
Faithful old Gus. Best night watchman we ever had.
I know. He was old and ready to retire. But don't you think something got him, too? He was found like Mrs. Locks, dead the next morning.
Mary, you'd...
There's talk now, Craig. Before long, people will be afraid to go to the museum. The police find any connection between those deaths and this crystalline man, you'll all be in trouble.
It's against any kind of logic to think that.
Darling, you've said so yourself. There are many things in this world we don't understand. That doesn't mean they don't exist. It means at the moment we haven't the capacity for understanding.
We've uncovered the genius of some civilization long past. If the man is not a statue, he certainly isn't a corpse, then he was preserved for a reason. Professor Norden suspected right away. He was trying to wall up the crypt so he wouldn't find him when he was fatally injured. Now the crystalline man lies in the museum like some Trojan horse, harboring God knows what menace from the dawn of time. I'm sorry, Mary. It had to come out.
I'm glad you said it, darling.
We should have destroyed him. We couldn't bring ourselves to do it. He's so lifelike. It would have seemed like murder.
You can't let things like this continue. The police have nothing to go on. But you know what's wrong. You can stop him.
All I have is a feeling, a suspicion. I promise you, Mary.
What, darling?
If there's another death, I'll take it on myself to find out what's wrong with the crystalline man.
There's night watchman. You want to ask him, Christine?
No, you ask.
Oh, all right. Mister?
Eh? Museum's closed. You kids go away.
I gotta ask you something.
Run along now. Be dark soon. You ought to be home.
Please, mister. We have to go inside.
Oh, do you now?
You tell him, Christine.
Okay, Jimmy. We were here after school today. I left my homework in there.
Museum's locked up. Come back tomorrow. Your books will be turned into the main office. You can pick them up then.
But you don't understand.
She has to study her homework tonight. Don't you see?
Or I'll get a spanking.
Do your parents know where you are?
Gosh, no.
They think we're at Ralph's seeing a turtle.
We said that so I could get my homework. Please, mister.
Well, you should be more careful.
You don't want us to get spanked, do you?
I'm not supposed to let anybody in. I might lose my job. Regulations, you know.
It'll be a secret just between us. We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, a secret.
Okay. Just between us, then. But remember, no tricks. Whisk in, pick up homework, whisk out. Just like that. Check?
Check.
Know where you left it, Christine?
Yes, on a table by the dinosaur.
It's pretty dark. Can you see your way?
I think so. Be right back.
What's your last name, son?
Taylor.
What? Your father is Craig Taylor?
Sure.
Professor Abernathy's associate. I knew it. Now I will be in trouble.
Don't worry. We won't tell him.
Some days you can't win. Christine, hurry up.
Let me go in. I'll find her.
Yes. Good idea. Quick, get your sister. Hurry up, son. I don't want any trouble. Now I've done it. When the professor finds I've broken regulations, I'll be out of me job. That's funny. Those kids are taking a long time. Christine! Jimmy! Make it snappy! Hope nobody comes along the street and sees me here with this door open. Oh, goodbye job. Hey, those two ought to be back. I don't hear a peep out of them. Getting too dark in there to make much out.
Hey, Christine! Jimmy!
Uh-oh. I don't like this.
Hey there! You kids all right?
Who was she, Craig?
Edna Thorpe, a cleaning woman.
Please, Mr. Taylor. I hope there won't be no trouble about me letting the kids in. How did I know they'd find old Mrs. Tharp dead?
Natural causes again, Craig?
Police coroner said heart attack. Christine, you're sure the dead woman was the only thing you saw?
Yes, Daddy. I just found my homework when I saw her. Then Jimmy came in.
We were too scared to move, Dad.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do?
Barry, you can see what we're facing here. Take the children home. I'll be along later.
But, Craig, aren't you coming with us?
No, I'm spending the night in the museum. It's time we learn the truth.
Not alone, darling. That's too dangerous.
The deaths occur only when there are no witnesses. The only way to find out is to bait the hook. I'll stay in there alone tonight. The killer may be tempted to strike again. And then we'll know. Ten past two. Getting sleepy. Big place. Those two dinosaurs aren't kittens. Egyptian mummies back in the east wing. Caveman relics. And the crystalline man in the slumber room. He's a standout, all right. Attracts the crowds in the jewel sarcophagus. There he is. Almost in a standing position. Sarcophagus tilted back so he can't fall out. 6 feet of complete mystery. A man of the world, but not of this world. Question is he statue or is he real? I think Norton knew. Too bad he couldn't have told us more. Strange thing is that in this collection of relics of the past, he alone doesn't reflect some state of decomposition. The key lies there, I'm sure of it. But logic tells me our killer is flesh and blood. I wish they turned on more light at night. I'm sorry I sent everyone away. The place has an eerie, uncomfortable feeling. Where's that chair I saw around here? Oh, there it is. Feel feels good to sit down. I don't think it'll hurt to close my eyes for a moment. I've been over every inch of this place. Safe enough, I guess. Could be coincidence. Those people who died, all old, including Norton. Oh, boy, I'm getting sleepy. Maybe a little catnap wouldn't hurt. Just a little one.
When I touch thee, breathe deeply, savage, and thou wilt be gone.
Wait! Then you are alive.
Since the beginning of time.
How old are you?
Perhaps a million of thy years.
But modern man doesn't go back that far. We are also men of science. Perhaps we could get together.
Savage. Barbarians. We are eternally apart.
Why haven't you risen before?
This form of life is like a battery. It must be charged.
I see. But the life force of others.
Thou speakest well, Savage.
So that's what Norton knew. Revive him and there'll be no stopping him.
Thou knowest too much, Savage. What is thy saying? Gone.
No!
Stand still. It will be painless. Just a touch, and I will be of strength to begin my work.
Don't come any closer.
Fear me not, Savage.
I'm warning you.
Where can thou escape? The wall is behind, and I am before thee.
Keep away from me.
Now, Savage, I shall smite thee to death.
Mary!
Are you all right? I couldn't let you stay alone. I hid over there. What happened to him?
That scream, high enough to shatter crystal. You saved my life. Look, the man of a million years at our feet in a million pieces.
Thank you.
have just heard Macabre, a special Far East Network presentation. Tonight's story was The Crystalline Man. In our cast were John Buey, Milton Radmilovich, Walt Sheldon, Army PFC Alan Frank, William Verdier, Mitzi Hennessy, Christine Verdier, James Sheldon, Air Force Sergeant Al LePage. Associate Director was Carolyn Johnston. Technical supervision by Hiroshi Ono, with special sound patterns by Airman First Class James Conley and Air Force Sergeant Bob Eddy. This is Air Force Sergeant Al LePage speaking. Macabre was written and directed by William Verdier.
Macabre comes to you each week at this time through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Macabre, on Tuned to Yesterday from New Year's Day 1962 on Armed Forces Radio. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.